on The Book Show with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We have a really wonderfully unique guest to visit with us today. This is Lucy Antek Johnson. She is the author, in a sense, of this book. Basically, this is a book that her dad wrote, he did the work for, and then he died at a young age, and her mom put this together, trying very carefully to be a great tribute to her late husband. And so Lucy has taken this and regenerated it and made it available now in a beautiful new publication, a new and expanded edition of This Was Toscanini, The Maestro, My Father, and Me, from Samuel Antek and Lucy Antek Johnson. It's from Brown Books Publishing Group. I have to say, Lucy, that this is really a very interesting book for me as a musician who trends toward being a jazzer, to read about someone who is a towering figure in classical music, and to find out that your dad was an exceptional conductor as well, and virtuoso violinist, and that he wrote about the great experience that he had playing for Toscanini.
Exactly. Thank you. He was handpicked at a very young age to be part of the original NBC Symphony. And in 1937, which I know sounds like eons ago, but it was in another century, RCA Victor, who owned the NBC radio network, because that was when there was radio, wanted to put together a symphony specifically under their umbrella. And they were lucky enough to get the... He was then considered not only one of the greatest musicians of the 20th century, but even maybe the most famous man in the world for a certain time. They got Arturo Toscanini from Italy to come to America and be the conductor, the official conductor of this new symphony. And so it was a coup for RCA, it was a coup for the musicians, it was a coup for the radio audience. And my father was handpicked among many other musicians to be a first violinist with that new symphony. And he was with the symphony for 17 years, from the first downbeat till the final concert in 1954. And the book, the original book, and then the work that I've done on it, covers mostly the creative process of what it is to make music. And certainly Toscanini's particular style and approach to music making. And so the reader, through insight and recollection and entertaining anecdotes and real music thoughtful prose, we get to witness and feel part of the process, the creative process of a man, Toscanini, who was in his own time considered an artistic genius. Now, often that happens many years after someone's gone, but that happened during his lifetime. And you speak about improvisation, although classical music is not intended for improvisation. What Toscanini did, he was considered the greatest interpreter of composers' creations. But he, too, would adapt and change and interpret differently quite often every time he performed a particular symphonic or operatic work. How fast is a 4/4 beat? How loud is forte? How soft is pianissimo? It's really up to the conductor, his instrument is the orchestra, and with the players to interpret. And sometimes quite often the interpretations shift. The tempo shifts, the accents shift. But he was following the score quite closely. But how he interpreted the score could be changed. So in a sense, no, it's not improvisation, but there was room for creativity and room for change.
Right. And I found it so interesting I really got a sense reading the book as your dad wrote it, and then the additional material that you have added to it to bring it back to life. Yeah. There was such a feeling of when your dad was playing that he was playing pieces that were standard repertoire and not huge surprises, but there was an entirely different energy and feeling to it. I got this and these are probably the words that he used, that when he was playing under Toscanini, that everyone in the orchestra was sort of electrified and kind of felt like this was almost like the first time they'd ever had ever played it really right, that they had been able to do it before, but this was the penultimate version of these classics.
Right.
And there were it was really exciting just to read about the energy that your dad and these other exceptional musicians felt when they're making this great music, and under Toscanini, who was not an easy taskmaster.
No, he was quite difficult. One of the things my father, in reference to what you just mentioned, is that the musicians, even though he was tough, and we can talk about that, each musician felt that their own skills were raised to a level they didn't even know they had. It was a combination of inspiration and leadership. And so they not only heard the music differently, but they played with such a different joy and enthusiasm. And it was not just a feast for the audience, but a feast for the musicians to be part of it. Because when you're playing an instrument, as you know, there's a different vibration. There's actually almost a physical vibration mm-hmm. that you're part of, which is different than the experience of the audience. And yes, Toscanini was a very tough taskmaster, and he was toughest on himself. He had a rage to master. He had a rage not for perfection, but to make it as beautiful as he could possibly hear in his head. And sometimes it was very frustrating. And there are many incidents in the book which can be stunning and entertaining, but they were real to the musicians when he was known to have temperament.
Right.
And maybe even a tantrum or two, and burst out in some Italian cursing, never to harm anyone, because he was actually a very congenial person off stage. But in his frustration, because he had a sound in his head and he was determined that he was going to get it out of the orchestra, and then it would all mesh for the listener. So
I had the great privilege of being in a band that invited, a college band that invited every famous band director that they could find from all these Big Ten schools and from military service bands and all to be guest conductors when I was when I was in the band and since then. And our director, Dr. Johnny Long, made a habit of bringing in these people. And he was pretty tough, but he brought in people like William Ravelli from Michigan, who mm-hmm. was notoriously difficult. I remember a particular rehearsal of an ensemble, a wind ensemble, that was made up of people who were all music majors, who were all their first chair players in their previous existence before they came to college. And right. So, these are really, really fine college musicians. And he turned to the lead player and asked her if she was a music major. She fearfully said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "You might reconsider that." You might reconsider that. And we all thought, oh, my gosh, if he goes after her, what's he going to do to me? We were in terror of this guy. And then I met him years later in a parking lot at a grocery store, and he was so nice, and he was so kind, and he was so complimentary. He says, "Oh my goodness, it was such a joy to work with musicians of your caliber." He says, "It was just amazing." People think that when you come to the South, you're not going to find players like you do in the Midwest or Northeast. He said, "But you guys, wow!" And I thought, "Are you the same guy? Did you have a stroke since the last time I met you?" It was quite interesting. So I had
let's call it an ego-driven moment of the leader. In this case, it's of an orchestra, but it could be the lead actor in a play or mm-hmm, a director, mm-hmm. where they just need to impose their authority. And with Toscanini, it wasn't that. It was his perseverance and his passion for what he was doing that could turn into rage, as opposed not always at the musician particularly, but at the experience. "You didn't come in fast enough. You know, it's not loud enough. Wait that extra eighth note," or whatever it is. It was in the service of music, and my father talks about that they loved him.
Yeah.
As tough as he was, and he was, and not all the time, by the way, but when those moments happened, and there were some memorable ones, which are written about,
yes,
they loved him for his passion, and that they knew it was in the service of the music and not to be just contrary or right. nasty or mean. My father says he was a peasant at rehearsals and an aristocrat in the concert hall. So all the emotion and all the frustration came out in the rehearsals or the recording sessions. But in the concerts, he was much more contained. They were well rehearsed. They all knew their parts, and it was very successful. But he wasn't, you know, waving his hands wildly in concerts.
Right.
He didn't believe in that. Drama for the sake of drama.
Interestingly enough, let me say first, in case you're just joining us, we're talking to Lucy Antek Johnson, who is the daughter of Samuel Antek, who was the first violinist for the NBC Orchestra for 17 years that it was on the air and that it was a unit, and it was directed by the legendary Toscanini during that time, and their experiences together, and it's just a marvelous book, and this is its second edition, because the first edition was when it came out within a few years of her dad's untimely death at age 49, and this is the second edition. It's from Brown Books Publishing Group, and it's available. It's a beautiful book, and it's available online and in good bookstores everywhere. One of the things that really I thought was fascinating was that your dad commented that there were some times in the performances that they didn't quite feel that they were quite as extraordinary as they were in some rehearsals, but mm-hmm. that the live concerts, when they traveled from place to place, those kept that sort of intensity and the idea of rising above feelings right. of everybody at the time and instead just infuse them with the energy that they wanted to make
right.
music.
I would imagine... Mind you, I'm not the music historian per se, but I would imagine that the idea of being recorded or live on radio had a certain inhibiting effect to Toscanini.
Right.
When he was on tour, and part of his 1950 tour, which was a cross-country tour, included a lot of cities in the South, and they had fabulous reception. He was a megastar. He was a rock star in those decades, mm-hmm. and people weren't, you know, didn't have alternatives. Listening to music or going to concerts or going to theater was how people got entertained. So for him to come to their town, their city, was an extraordinary moment. And so he felt the energy from the audience, but he was also free because he wasn't constrained to a certain time on the air,
right.
off the air, and all of that. But he had some very, very successful concerts in the South, all across the country. And then they also did a tour of South America in 1940, which was just at the beginning of World War II.
Mm.
America wasn't in the war yet, but Europe was. And they were going to South America, which had a lot of Nazi sympathizers. So
right.
it was a tough time for the maestro because he had fled the tyranny of Mussolini in Italy. Toscanini was a devout anti-fascist, and he had refused to play in Italy once the fascism came into power, and he was under strict surveillance. They made it very difficult for him, and he refused to play in Italy for years, which of course upset Mussolini.
Yes.
But he played around the world, and then when he was invited to come to America for this opportunity, he moved his whole family. He left Italy and didn't go back until after the war. So he found great joy in traveling and performing around the world in live concerts, yes.
So let's talk about your dad a little bit. He won a fellowship to attend the Juilliard Foundation, played solo concerts extensively. In 1937, he's tapped to become a first violinist for the NBC Orchestra, created by David Sarnoff as a cultural public relations event to bring people to NBC
right.
and to buy their radios from RCA that made them.
And sell records.
Yes, okay. And sell records.
He was
Sarnoff was not an engineer, but he was a great entrepreneur and one of the real founders of the radio business, the broadcast
yeah.
business. He was
yeah.
very savvy. So he creates this incredible symphony orchestra, brings in Arturo Toscanini to be the conductor. And it's on the air and it's as an organization for 17 years, 1937, 1954.
You have to remember, Toscanini was 70 when he began.
Right.
And 87 when he retired. So he was already, an older man who now was starting a whole new chapter.
And your dad describes how he refused to sit, like a lot of conductors do, or lean, say, against
right.
something. So he stood. And by the end of a concert, his legs were just exhausted, and
right.
he would expend so much energy directing, not flamboyantly,
right,
but with
right.
great control, great passion. And he would just be exhausted and drenched with sweat by the time that the concert was over. And he's an old man by already before this really gets going good.
Right. When most people are slowing down their lives, he was revving his up.
Yeah. People often think that if you get hired to work for a musical organization, well, then you've got a job. You don't have to worry about anything else. But that's not necessarily the case because you don't necessarily play 7 days a week.
Of course.
And so your dad became a conductor, became musical director and conductor of the New Jersey Symphony in 1947, associate conductor of the Chicago Symphony, inaugurated the Young People's Concert Series in New Jersey, and named director of all Young People's Concerts of the Philadelphia Orchestra. He guest conducted. I mean, your dad was a big deal, too.
He was a big deal. And he created children's concerts, and they were interactive a few years before Leonard Bernstein did, I have to say.
Yeah.
And those formats were in demand, and that's, you know, he started to work with different orchestras, both for the adult audience and the children's audiences. But he had created something very special in New Jersey, was really on the rise as a major conductor. And when Toscanini asked my dad to guest conduct the NBC Symphony, meaning Toscanini didn't conduct all season long. There were a few. That was quite an honor, and Dad's future was sealed after that. My goodness, what an honor. And sadly, he died a few years later, very suddenly.
Another thing that I find really interesting about this book, you write with great passion, and of course, it's your dad. So, you know, you want people to understand that this was not just a run-of-the-mill guy. This was a great talent cut short. Mm-hmm. But you've been in TV production and the entertainment industry your life, working all over the place, working with great producers, producing movies for TV, working for NBC, which I love the symmetry of that. And you were the senior vice president of daytime and children's programs for CBS for 14 years.
Yeah.
So you know your way around the entertainment business as well. Have you met many other people that had ever, any other members of the NBC orchestra? Are there any of them still around?
Well, the members are all gone.
Yeah.
Because the last concert was in 1954, and if you just do the math, I don't think there are any players left.
Yeah.
But what's happened as a result of the research I've been doing and the way life takes you, a lot of the children of, I being one of them, of the original members have started to find each other. And we're of a certain age, too, so it's fun. And one of them is a cellist, like his dad was a cellist. Another is a horn player, like his dad was a horn player. It just so happened that they became musicians. They didn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a prerequisite. But we've all started to connect with each other. And in the days when I started in television and I started working, which was a few decades ago, yes, there were some members very definitely alive. And after the NBC Symphony folded because of his retirement, they went off in different musical directions. Some moved to Los Angeles and became part of the recording scene. Some had their own ensembles and string quartets, and others worked for other symphonies. But so it depends what decade you're referring to. As of now, no, there wouldn't be anyone directly to talk to. But then when I was working, and especially when I was working at NBC, that was my first job. And believe it or not, it was in the record library, and which at the time fueled and provided all the music for the then NBC radio network. It was called Monitor, which is a radio series that they had. Mm-hmm. And I would help the producers of that radio program pick out Tony Bennett or Frank Sinatra or Edie Gourmet or whoever was popular at the time, you know, for them to play. So I was in heaven, and I was walking down the same halls, coming up the same elevators as my dad and Toscanini had done, because Studio 8H, which is where the concerts were held, and people now might know it as the studio of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And in fact, the NBC concerts were done live on Saturday, so maybe you could say they were the original Saturday Night Live. But Studio 8H was very much there when I started working. It was just being used as a television studio at that point, not a concert studio. And so, yes, I was the continuum of the legacy, so to speak, the next one to walk the halls. And I had a lot of wonderful years at NBC. And then when I moved to California, by coincidence, not design, but I got an opportunity to work in the programming department after years of production work on specials and series in New York. There was a migration to Los Angeles, where the work really was at the time. And I worked for NBC in Los Angeles in the programming department, and then moved over to CBS.
Now, let's take just a moment and talk about your mom, too, because
yes.
she helped keep the legacy. She's the one that put all the parts of your dad's book together and had it published originally, right?
Yes. He had already had a publishing deal.
Okay.
He was already under contract to write this book. And what is currently in the book are five hefty, you know, chapters mm-hmm. of slightly different angles of what it was like to work with Toscanini and the musician's experience. And from the perspective of someone in the orchestra, he died before he could complete the book. That does not mean it ended in mid-sentence. He had completed that particular essay that's now there. But I just know he meant to write at least a closing chapter, which he never got to do. And the publisher had asked my mother, would she want to write an end piece? And she said, no, let this all just be his words. And I have come along now and written intros to each of his original chapters, but I also wrap it up at the end with what I call the coda, which talks about what he might have written as his last chapter. And it's where I got this idea was through some handwritten notes that I found in his archives, of notes that he had made to himself. They were not officially to the publisher, about the final concert and how sad it was, because Toscanini had a rough time that night, and how sad it was that final concert was one that the maestro had suffered a bit through, and the audience had, and the orchestra, but he never got to write it. So we'll never really know how he would have completed the manuscript. And my mother, who pulled all the pieces together with the publisher and had typed all of these chapters time.
Yeah.
And she had chosen, no, let it just be as he created it. So, yes, I'm sure there was some line editing and proofing, but by and large, nothing was rewritten or written anew. And I didn't touch it either. I mean, I looked over his manuscript, which I've lived with for years, mm-hmm. and looked at it with fresh eyes. And maybe I altered a sentence here or two just to, I don't know, make it sound more current. But
yeah.
I didn't touch his work, and created not only my own essays to support his work, but also added new photographs from my archives to bring my experience alive, my experience of growing up in a musical family where Toscanini had such a strong impact. I had my own angle and point of view. So that's hence the subtitle, The Maestro, My Father, and Me. But yes, he died very young, unexpectedly, and sadly tragic. And yes, my mom, God bless her, put it together. And it took a few years, and it was published posthumously to huge acclaim. Because Toscanini had been such a celebrity, there was still eagerness and hunger mm-hmm. to know more about him. What was he really like? What was it really like at a rehearsal? What was it really like to, you know, is he what they say, and is he this and is he that? And this answered all of that and gave the public joy of reading this. Like we would now want to read, I don't know, name somebody. I would say the Beatles or
right.
somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It would have to be somebody.
We're looking at biopics of Aretha Franklin now. You know, it's just we're
right.
always so interested in what is the celebrity really like, and how do they do what they do? And this answered that. And it was the first and still remains the only full-length narrative told from the perspective of a musician who actually worked with him, not a critic and not a historian.
Right.
Someone who was actually there. So it's a first-person, behind-the-scenes experience.
That's really what makes it, that's what gives it the the kind of feel that it has, the authenticity of it. These are your dad's words talking about experiences he had with this incredible giant of a musician who was just a human being too. And sometimes right. he would yell at the orchestra, and the next couple of minutes he'd go, well, that was just me being foolish.
Right.
You know.
Or you know, making music is difficult, he would say. It's difficile in Italian.
he peppered his comments with Italian an awful lot. I'm guessing that a lot of the musicians either knew Italian before he started directing them, or they learned Italian very quickly.
I would say they learned very quickly. And also, it was said so often over many years, they and by tone of voice, they knew the difference. But he spoke English. He spoke English with a heavily accented, but of course he was most comfortable in his native language,
yeah.
No doubt.
Well, and it does help that there are a lot of musical notation is in Italian anyway.
Yes.
So classical musicians know bits and pieces of Italian in the expressions and so forth. So probably some things, it wasn't as big a surprise as others, but still, that's part of his charm after reading the book. That's part of the charm that I get from reading about.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
What part of my mission was, or my intention and my result, was the original book, which is told in the first person from my father, he doesn't talk about himself. He doesn't share information about himself. He's talking about his experience in the orchestra. So I decided it was time to give, in my essays, to give my dad a little more spotlight and shine a little light on his life and his accomplishments, because he didn't get a chance to do that for himself. Right. And so it's a you're kind of, it's interweaving memoir on my part, but also a little more information about my dad's career, which was affected and encouraged and supported by Toscanini. So it intertwines. They're not two separate tracks. So I'm very pleased to have given my dad this moment.
Yes.
To have this attention.
Well, it is really lovely. It's a charming and warm book. It is very interesting to find out about people who were such cultural icons of the day, and
exactly.
to find out what was it like to really know them. What was it to be with your dad in the orchestra through his words, to give you a feeling of what it was like to be in a working situation with this giant.
And as with most artistic icons and geniuses, their work, what they contributed, lives on.
Yes.
Whether it be a writer or an actor or a dancer, the people who have reached that top level, as Arturo Toscanini did, their work is still relevant,
right.
and you can still learn from and be inspired by how they did what they did. That's part of what makes, whether this book is read by just a classical music fan, an enthusiast, or a musician, there's it's something for everyone. You don't have to be a musician or a classical music historian to appreciate this.
Absolutely. This was Toscanini, the maestro, my father and me, from Samuel Antec and Lucy Antec Johnson, new and expanded edition from Brown Books Publishing Group, available online and in bookstores everywhere. Do you have a website people can...
I do, and guess what it's called? ThisWasToscanini.com.
Excellent.
And it also lists, you know, events and information about him and my dad. So
wonderful.
Yes, please visit.
Lucy, thank you very much.
It's just such an honor to be able to give this tribute to the maestro, to my dad, to my mom, and feel wonderfully connected to this very memorable time in classical music history.
Absolutely.
And that I was able to experience some of it directly and take a look back. So it's been a privilege. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to visit with us today on The Bookshelf. And our guest once again is Lucy Antec Johnson, who, taking her dad's book and reworking it, has brought his career and his unique experience as a member of the NBC Symphony Orchestra with a cultural giant of the era, new and expanded edition of This Was Toscanini, The Maestro, My Father, and Me, from Brown Books Publishing Group. The website, thiswastoscanini.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.